Hello, everyone. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever time zone you're in this extremely crazy 2020 that just keeps throwing more and more craziness at us, especially in the, especially, I guess, in America right now with all of the instability and chaos that's going on. How are you doing, Hemant?
I mean, I'm doing as well as can be, but you're right, it is chaotic.
Yeah. Well, good to hear that you're doing okay, and wanted to actually have this conversation for a long time now. I've been following you with, you know, since pretty much, I think, since I left Islam.
Wow.
And somehow, I can't remember how I found you, but I somehow found you. And you know, let's talk about you a little bit more. Let's talk about,
sure,
where did the name The Friendly Atheist come from? Like, why not The Angry Atheist? Why are you friendly? Why not angry? Like,
there actually is an angry atheist, amazing atheist. But
and there's lots of angry atheists. Okay.
There are. You know what it was? It was about 15 or so years ago when I started my website and started doing any of this stuff. I found that anytime atheists were even mentioned in the media, they were always referred to as angry or militant or staunch or whatever. And I knew that I was doing this weird stunt that would get some publicity. And I was like, well, if they're going to mention the fact that I'm an atheist, I'm going to force them to not say angry. And how do I do that? And I figured if I call the website Friendly Atheist, at least I'm making them say those words together. But the truth is, like, I've met plenty of atheists. Most of them have been pretty damn friendly. And yeah, some of them are not. Some of them are really nasty, but that's the same in any group. But like, it seems unfair that because it's an unpopular belief that it gets a nasty stereotype associated with it. And if I can do anything to change that, then good.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those tropes that atheists are angry, right? And I guess in some way, you know, when you want to upset the cult, you really need to sometimes, you know, be a little bit different, and you need to be a little bit like, right now, I don't know which side you're on. I mean, I think I know. I have a feeling I know, but we won't get into that.
You know, what's weird is that there are plenty of things I get angry about, and I feel like that comes through on my website, on YouTube, whatever. And there is always the comment of, oh, I thought you were friendly. And it doesn't mean you're not critical. And so I feel like I'm plenty angry about the right stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And the name doesn't contradict that. I mean, the name is the name. I don't even like the name that much. I don't think it fits anymore. It's one of those, like, you know, when you pick something, like, you're probably the same age as me, roughly, like when you pick something in high school and then it just sticks with you for life. It's like, I don't think that works anymore, but I'm stuck with it. But I don't think it stops me from being angry when I need to be angry.
Or critical. Or,
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that you have a really interesting background because you are ex-Jain.
Yeah. Now,
Jainism is a religion that, like, almost nobody knows about, which I think is interesting. Sam Harris always brings it up.
Like,
when he's comparing, he's like, you know, you have extreme Muslims and then you have extreme Jains. Tell us about what does he mean when why does he use that comparison?
I don't know what he's used lately, but I know the first time I encountered it with him, in his book, The End of Faith, he kind of made this argument that extreme any religion is bad. And he also said, like, moderates are providing cover for the extremists.
Yeah.
But he went ahead and said, if you're extreme Jain, maybe the world wouldn't be so bad. And the reason was Jainism is all about nonviolence. So if you're extremely nonviolent, that wouldn't be such a bad thing. But the reason I left it is because they do have dogma. They do have supernatural beliefs that make no sense. They believe in karma, reincarnation. They believe in a version of heaven and hell and all that stuff that I couldn't buy into. But philosophically, I mean, the idea of being vegetarian, for example, at the very least, like, I can get on board with that ethically, if not religiously, you know what I mean? So, like, philosophically, there's a lot of good principles there. but they do believe in a lot of weird supernatural stuff too that make no sense. So I couldn't call myself a Jain.
Do you take any practices from Jainism? For example, meditation. Is there any meditation in Jainism? Anything like that?
There is. I do not. That's not something that stuck along for the ride for me because it doesn't do anything for me.
Okay.
But I mean, that I could totally see a secular argument for keeping that around. I mean, just the idea of clearing your mind, focusing on something and not thinking about any, like that's valuable if you like that sort of thing.
Definitely. Definitely. So isn't it true? I mean, this is what I was taught in Jainism. They have like these very long fasts where there's only water. I don't know if it's 60 days or how long it is. Extremely long time, right?
Yeah. So I want to clarify, like, so my parents are Jain and they did it in the US where it was, so, and I only bring that up to say, I don't know what true Jainism is because everyone has their variations of it. And I feel like every time I talk to another Jain, our upbringing was slightly different. Even our beliefs were slightly different. Like, I felt like I was raised to believe in a God, but Jainism doesn't have a God.
Oh yeah.
So it's like, everyone has slightly different things. But in terms of fasting, what my family, my temple around me did, during our holiest part of the year, there were basically 8 days you were supposed to fast. Mm-hmm. And if you did anything, it was, you could drink water as long as you had boiled it first. But most of us never did that.
Yeah.
The way the parents told the kids to do it is like, you should eat once a day.
Oh yeah.
But also if you go back, it's like, wait, there's no reason for anyone to have to do this. And it's downright dangerous when you tell a growing kid to have one meal a day because they're pressured into it for religious reasons. And that's dangerous. And I have, by the way, covered on my site, there are instances where kids have either gotten sick or died because their fasting went overboard. And again, so I mean, for Jainism being a nonviolent religion, the dogma has consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I found strange about that, like this whole thing about sweeping away the bugs and wearing a thing over your...
Right. The idea is you're not supposed to kill anything. So obviously don't eat meat. But also if you're supposed to wear a mask because you're not supposed to kill bacteria, you're supposed to sweep the ground so you're not stepping on any creatures or bugs, which again, it can go overboard. But in principle, like if someone's going to go overboard with religion, that seems like a very nice thing to do compared to other things you could do.
You know, a funny thing is, if this was Islam, you'd have a scholar like Zakir Naik saying, brother, it was mentioned 1400 years ago to wear a mask. You see, Jainism is a true religion.
Oh, yeah.
They predicted the coronavirus. You have to wear a mask.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny that like the dogma is supposed to be saving lives, but yet it's actually ending up killing actually innocent people. And
it could,
it can, true, it definitely can. And what do you think about the Islamic fast?
So my understanding of it, correct me if I'm wrong, is, I mean, you can eat when it's sundown and stuff, so you you are eating at least once a day, which gets back to that's kind of what we were doing too. At least if you were going, my parents actually never forced me to do it. My sister went along with it for like 1 or 2 years or something, but they never pushed it on us. But like, so it wasn't that different, you know? We were told just eat once when you feel like it, but cram your whole meal into that.
Yeah.
There wasn't a specific time to do it. So, I mean, I understand the Ramadan version of that.
Well. My concern is kind of more with kids, like when you have kids and then again, you're kind of, if you're forcing them to do it, I feel like there's so much harm that can come out of one, kids are still growing.
Yeah.
Two is it's also fasting from water. And three is, you know,
If you're going to school? What if you're doing something? And what if you have health issues? And if you have health issues, that mean you need to get stuff going.
Yeah, if you have health issues, you're allowed to miss the fasting. So like my cousin had diabetes, and I think at some point she was still fasting, and then she realized she couldn't do it anymore. So then she would pay money. There's a fidya you can pay, which is you donate money to the poor.
Okay.
And that's only if you can never make it up. If you're just temporarily sick, like if you get sick while you're fasting, then you stop fasting and you have to make it up before the next Ramadan.
And again, all of these just sound like rules you make up on the spot. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's fine. There is a system. There's a method to it all. But yeah, at some point, it's like, you have to do this. Oh, yeah. You can't? Well, here's the little loophole we've created just for you. Oh, you can't either? Here's your loophole.
Yeah.
It's all religion for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the loopholes are more of an issue in Islam, not with that, but with the longer fast. So, for example, if you're fasting up in the North Pole, then there's no sunset, right?
Right, so, right.
Yeah, so then you need a huge exception for that, which is, right. I don't know if it's a huge exception. You need an exception for that because it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So whoever came up with this either didn't understand. And it's quite unfair because you end up with a situation where, like in Canada, the fasts are like 17 hours. Let's say Toronto area, they're like 17 hours. If you go up north more to, like, you know, my other cousin is Edmonton.
Yeah.
Dude, it was like 18 hours.
Oh, and you got to wait.
In summer. So now, but also, like, if you wait long enough. Now, the interesting thing is the Islamic calendar is not intercalated. It's a lunar calendar. It's shorter than the Gregorian calendar. It's not synced up to the month. So what happens is every year it moves back by 10 days. So it cycles through the year, right? And so what happens is eventually we'll be fasting in summer here. Winter. So then we'll have like super short fasts, right?
Feels like they never took all that into account.
Yeah, Muhammad never took all this into account. Because, well, there's a simple reason, is he didn't know about the time zones.
Right.
Right. I mean, the religion was born in the Middle East at a time where there was no concept of, like, it's a flat earth, right? I mean, people thought that, you know, there's the edges of the earth and then that's it. And then they thought it was like a little ball going around the thing, the earth. So, yeah. You know, do you find that a lot of the dogma gets in the way of people's lives? Now let's talk about Christianity, because you talk a lot about Christianity.
Right.
Do you think Christianity is harmful to humanity? Because a lot of times in my sphere as an ex-Muslim, you get that comparison a lot, that Christianity is much better than Islam.
I don't buy that. But it depends what everyone's doing with it. I mean, maybe your case is the same. Pretty much all the Muslims I know are fine. There's no issue with their faith. I don't agree with it. Whatever. I don't agree with a lot of things anyone does about anything. You know, who cares?
Yeah.
So it's one of those like, it doesn't really matter. I would say the same thing about a lot of Christians too. I don't like that question. Is the religion harmful or not? Because it's a religion. What are you doing with it?
Yeah.
How crazy is it getting? Because again, if the rules are like, well, you got to fast here, but there are exceptions if you need to be, that probably isn't the worst thing compared to a like fundamentalist Christian religion that says not only should you ignore science and that it's wrong, but also we're going to brainwash you about this from a young age. And it goes against stuff that's important. And those same people are fighting to change laws to make sure they can push their stuff into schools and things like that. That's where I kick in. That's where I get angry and upset about this stuff. There are versions of Christianity that are definitely harmful. I mean, we see it in the Trump administration right now. Like, the people he surrounds himself with is a very specific brand of Christianity that I find very harmful. That is a very popular type of Christianity. But also, there are so many different Christian denominations that actively fight against him that I feel their values match up with mine very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're fine. Like, I would not waste my time arguing with them about religion because, frankly, like, our differences about God are so meaningless when it comes to what do we stand for? What are we fighting for? They're not harmful. They're fine. They're wrong, but they're fine. And so it's like, okay, I don't mind if more Christians, I wouldn't mind if more Christians were like them.
Yeah. So do you call yourself anti-theist?
No, because again, what are we talking about? There are plenty of things that I genuinely don't like. And not just like, oh, I don't like this musician, but like politically speaking, I don't there's nothing about my values that matches up with like the Republican Party. Yeah. Am I anti-Republican? I mean, it depends on what we're talking about. I feel like it's more fair to say like there are versions of it that can be really harmful, and I will fight against that. But again, here's why I don't like anti-theist. That suggests that because someone believes in God, that is kind of that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest concern for me, because too many people believe in God and are fine and they do good stuff and we would get along, and like, they're not the problem in the world. I wish more people were like them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how can you be anti-theist just because someone's wrong about something else? I don't buy that. I mean, there's so many people that don't share my political views either, but I also don't find them harmful. I find them fighting for the same direction that I want to go in. Mm. So fine. I'm not anti those people. I just, whatever. It depends what we're talking about. There's just too many good religious people out there that I don't care if they believe in God. So anti-theist is very broad and it's sloppy. I don't get how you could be anti-theist, because why are you so... I don't get why anyone who uses that label to the point where they're thinking like believing in God is this problem that demands that I oppose it.
Yeah.
It's not. Most, like, there are so many progressive religious people out there doing good stuff.
Yeah.
They are not the enemy.
Yeah.
That's so, I don't know. I don't like I wouldn't call myself that at all, because I'm not against religion. I think it's wrong, but not all of it is poison, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So I actually have really similar views to you as well. And some of the people who I speak to regularly, some of the activists I know are actually anti-theist. I tend not to be, because I feel like it's not only what everything that you said, but also, you know, the same thing about Islam is not going away, religion is not going to go away,
right?
Christianity is not going to go away. I mean, if Christianity and Judaism are still around after like 2000 plus years, why do people think Islam is going away?
Yeah, they're not going to go away. And also, again, most Muslims that are part of the groups I work with and that I know personally too, like, we're fighting for the same things. I don't care what they believe. It's irrelevant to me. They can live their lives, do whatever they want. So I'm not against them. I don't. And again, I feel like this is a switch that I have made personally in the past 10 years or so, where when I started out, I really did think religion was the most obvious and biggest error when it comes to like critical thinking. Like, how can you believe in that? And if I can, as an atheist, if I can get you to stop believing in God and turn you like rational that way, maybe that'll trickle down and you'll start thinking critically about everything. I used to think that. And I think I'm wrong about that now. I think that is not the biggest issue. I feel like there are some atheists who support Trumpism and stuff where it's like, did I win anything because they're atheists? No, I'm not on their side.
Yeah.
I don't like them. I don't like what they stand for. I don't win anything because they're atheists, you know? So it's like, clearly being an atheist did not lead them to critical thinking. And I feel like politics is a bigger problem, at least as we're seeing it in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
To me, that issue is a bigger issue than our religious differences.
So do you think the most important thing is that people follow signs, people follow the evidence, people are evidence, like we should be evidence-based creatures, not dogmatic, but
I agree. Those are important. I certainly think those things are important and worth fighting for. And I think if we do that, I mean, that's better than the alternative. Mm. Now, the question is that the end all be all of what we do with that? Again, my point, like, I know a lot of atheists who would tell you they support science, they are rational people. Mm. And yet they believe a lot of really stupid things about politics and other issues related to that. And it's like, okay, well, you're rational in one sense, but it doesn't trickle into anything else you do. So where did we go wrong?
And why is that? Like, why do you think people are like that? Why is it that And let's we can even use the example of a religious person where the same exact thing you just said, they are completely skeptical towards part of their life, the evidence based, and they'll go to the best school if they want to buy a barbecue, they'll do all the research in the world. But when it comes to their particular religious belief, somehow there's a blind spot there. So to the point where some of these people I know, like a Muslim, like, for example, pharmacists, the entire field of study is all about how, you know, medicine works on and drugs and all of that. Yet they don't believe in evolution. And they studied it, they understand it, yet they somehow don't accept it. So there's this huge blind spot. You gave the counter example or the mirror image of that, which is like an atheist that is like skeptical and rational about God. And, you know, I don't believe in any of this superstitious fairy tale myths and Santa Claus or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to like other issues, they're like completely, is that just a human condition?
Yeah, it probably is. And once you get sucked into that rabbit hole, you start believing that anyone who says they are rational and uses all those buzzwords, like I'm rational, therefore feminism is a poison.
Yeah.
You know, they'll start believing that stuff because it feels like it's the same type of thinking, that it's the same language. And they're like, yes, I'm rational, so I'm with you on that. Women do stuff, whatever they say. Like, it is easy to go down that rabbit hole, and I've seen a lot of people do it. I mean, you're on YouTube. You all see this all the time, too. And so, like, them being an atheist, I don't feel like I don't feel like atheism is better off because those people are there. I'm not saying they're not atheists. I'm saying they're clearly not rational. Mm. They clearly are susceptible to authoritative voices saying something and they just basically blindly believe it, or at least convince themselves that it's true. It's like, isn't that what we were trying to get away from? I guess not.
Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, when you talk about like progressive believers and, you know, you're actually allying yourself with them, and the evidence I've seen, or the surveys I've seen, the polls I've seen show that at least in the US, I think something like 50% of Muslims are actually in support of LGBT rights. But for example, in the UK, it's pretty bad where you have like protests, to pull, you know, Muslim kids out of schools because they're teaching that, you know, for example, gays exist, or like, you know, being gay is a thing.
Right. And
so there's I think all over the world, there's a big difference. And like, what do you think about that? Do you feel like Muslims are a little bit more conservative still than Christians in terms of the resistance to like LGBT rights? Do you have any exposure to that?
I will tell you this. So I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, certainly not in the US. I will tell you, when it comes to who is fighting LGBTQ rights in the US, it's never any significant group of Muslims. As in, like, that's not the group that is fighting to stop other people from getting rights. And maybe that's partly because I think when you're a Muslim in the US, you're so often the victim of oppression and religious discrimination that, like, why are you actively fighting to stop other minorities from getting equal rights?
Yeah.
Because no one's saying your mosque has to sanction, so who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care what your religion believes. It's public policy that I care about.
Yeah.
And Muslims, maybe a fringe voice or two, but as a group, they're not the problems. Conservative Christians are certainly problems. Mormons as a whole are problems. But even young Mormons don't agree with their church on this. Young Catholics definitely don't agree with the church on this. And I don't know off the top of my head what the difference is for like young Muslims versus older ones. I have to believe young Muslims in the U.S. would not care because so many of them are growing up around where they know a gay person. And it's like, yeah, whatever. No one cares. Like, who cares? Let them do what they want.
Yeah, it's definitely still a battle in the Muslim world. And even in Muslim society. So there's kind of a difference. And I have a gay ex-Muslim friend, and he actually brought this up when I mentioned this. I'm like, hey, look at the stats in the US. They're pretty positive overall for Muslims. And he's like, are we talking about, like, you know, them? Are we talking about the attitudes towards non-Muslim gays or gays in their own family? So when it's like the child is gay,
yeah,
then it's much worse. It's not acceptable. It's still a huge problem. And
right.
And, you know, I'm going to share something. I have a friend. I'm going to do an interview with him at some point. His name is Frank, and he is a progressive Muslim. So he's a perennialist. He sort of believes in this, you know, there's truth in all religions and there's one God or whatever. And he said he's been trying for 9 years to establish a progressive mosque that is LGBT friendly, and he has given up now. I was sad to see that.
Where does he live?
He's in the US somewhere. I don't recall off the top of my head. I'll have to double check mm-hmm. that. Let me see if I can find out.
So, I'm only asking because I've heard similar complaints from Christians as well, and I often hear from them,
Ohio.
Like
Columbus.
In Ohio, and I don't know what the Muslim community is like there, because like there are some areas in the U.S. where you're going to find more conservative Muslims, others like in larger cities where it shouldn't be hard to find more progressive any religion, but I've heard the same issue within Christians too. Like someone wants to start a more inclusive church, but it depends on where you live and how many people you can get to support you and all that stuff. So, yeah, sure. It depends where you're at. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and he there is, I don't exactly, I'll have to look into this. I'm not exactly sure what the issue was, but I do know that there was the battle is still being fought for in the Muslim community too. And from my perspective as an ex-Muslim, I feel like the problem may be that Islam is a younger religion and it hasn't been tamed by secularism the same way that Christianity and Judaism has.
Hmm.
That's my sort of reflection on it. So like when you see like...
Let me ask you, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Like, yeah. Do you know the answer? When did a lot of Muslims immigrate to the US and or Canada? Like roughly?
That I'm not sure.
Because I know like for... my family, like a lot of Indians came in the 70s, and whatever religious and cultural things were commonplace for my parents' generation of immigrants, a lot of the kids have maybe kept around some of the cultural things and not so much the religious things as much. Just once my generation has kind of assimilated in, it changed. And I don't know if Islam is younger in the U.S. or Canada, where that much distance hasn't occurred yet. So it's a little easier to kind of side with your parents' take on things.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case or not.
Yeah. And it's difficult to pull apart the cultural and religious sort of values, because sometimes they go together. Like a good example is honor killing. Honor killing is a very odd one, because technically in Islam, honor killing is not allowed in the Islamic teachings. The Quran talks about, you know, the man or the person that buries his daughter alive, she'll be asked about it. She'll be asked, why were you killed on day of judgment? So it frowns upon killing your daughter, and it teaches...
And yet it is a cultural thing.
Yet it's a huge thing in Muslim communities.
Right.
In like mainly Muslim communities. And that's the thing, right? So there's some values of misogyny. There's some values of honor, of chastity, of marrying a virgin.
Right.
Somehow those things convert into honor killings, although technically it's not allowed in the religion. So it's...
Right. Because again, it's no one's ever following a religion to a T. It changes as the culture develops and stuff. And this is again where... if that was a thing that might have been acceptable at one point, I have to think that as younger people, especially when they're growing up surrounded by friends who are not of the same religion and culture, you realize, oh, that's messed up. Like, how could my people ever be for that? So even though we do hear those stories, and I cover them often on my site, I don't know that like younger people are growing up overwhelmingly in Islam and thinking that's okay. I think most Muslims in the US would say, no, that's pretty messed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm kind of embarrassed about this, but like when I was conservative Muslim, I don't know if it was my idea or my wife's idea. Maybe I can blame my wife for this, but one of us, anyways, we actually pulled the kids out of school on the pink day. They had a day where they wanted to talk. I don't know why they put it on one specific day like that.
Yeah.
Maybe because they knew that some people would have a problem with it and they wanted to sort of allow us to exclude them rather than creating a hoopla over it. I mean, personally, if I was an administrator, I wouldn't have had one day like that. Mm-hmm. I would have just kind of like sped it out over the curriculum and, you know, kind of included the teachings in a way that you can't really just pull someone out. But I think they wanted to make like a day for it to kind of, you know, show the support. It was an anti-bullying day, but also kind of an LGBT thing at the same time.
Right.
Right. So I actually pulled my kids out of that. And so there's almost like, the funny thing is, if you know my story, I grew up in, as an Ismaili, were like relatively liberal Muslims. The sect is very liberal overall. And then I converted to Sunnism. And so there's this movement, you know, I almost feel like the reason why we always have to keep doing this activism work is because you never know when there's going to be a resurgence of Islamic fundamentalism, I guess also Christian fundamentalism or any fundamentalism. Right now in India, you have Hindutva sort of nationalism. And, you know, there's all of these things that are kind of hurting Muslims now in India. So there's always going to be this fanaticism that keeps rearing its ugly head, you know?
Right, right.
And I feel like it's so important for us to just, like, this is why I personally do this. From your perspective, how would you answer the question of why is it important to continue to allow freedom to criticize religion? Or just to, you know, be open about criticisms and not to block that.
I feel like my personal fight is more against conservative religion. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like what I can offer is to say, look, I've spent the past 10 years plus documenting all the ways religion is used for evil. Look at all the things that go wrong when people believe and don't have critical thinking and don't care about science. Just look at the pandemic stuff. Like, you could see how religion is steering people in the wrong direction. And for some people, I may not convince them God doesn't exist, but maybe they could look at that and say, okay, there's no way I could belong to this type of Christianity. Let me take a step away from that. And for some people who have talked to me, I have heard them say, if I take a step away, I'll take another step away and another step. And like, eventually they move away from it altogether.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So maybe that happens. I don't care. But like, I have heard from people who said they started moving in those directions.
So as someone who's been speaking about atheism for a long time, Do you feel like it's important to express your lack of belief? Is it important to kind of talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it does help anytime you see anyone being open about it. Because again, depending on where some people live, they don't know anyone else who is an atheist. They don't have a community around them. And so to be able to see someone on YouTube, to read someone who makes sense to them, that is helpful. Mm-hmm. And they realize, okay, I'm not crazy in thinking this stuff. There are other people out there who feel that way. So if I can offer that, fantastic. I'm sure the same thing is happening where you've heard from other ex-Muslims who are afraid to say anything about it. And so that helps. And anytime you could be, 100% of the time, when someone has started a podcast or a YouTube channel or whatever, and they don't think anyone's watching, they don't think anyone's listening, they have always, within a short amount of time, heard from someone who was a stranger who said, I heard you, I connected with you, thank you. That's always happened. So hearing people who agree with you and can help take shape of the beliefs that you have, and maybe you have an inkling of it, but you're not sure what to do with it, and someone else can help shape that.
Yeah,
that is really helpful.
Have you had any sort of personal stories of like the work that you did and how it touched someone or affected the life that you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
I have heard. I do keep a folder in my like inbox of like nice stories people share with me, and I'm suddenly stuck to hear them. But I did hear from one person recently who said she was from a conservative family and broke away from it, and her husband broke away from it at around the same time. And hearing what I was saying, what my podcasting partner was saying, like, help them figure out, like, yes, that makes way more sense than wherever I'm coming from. And when you do that after a while, like, I don't know how long it took for you to go from Islam to atheist. Like, well, how long was that?
So for me, what I've heard from different people is everybody's different. But in my case, it was pretty quick. It was like I was, to people outside, they were shocked. It was a couple of weeks. It was like a month. It was like,
scooch this over for a second.
Yep. I was like, I am going to find out. So my story, what happened was I ran into something in the Quran that caused me a lot of doubt. And it was basically some of the scientific descriptions of the universe and all of that stuff. So this caused me some sort of cognitive dissonance. And I'm like, well, this is kind of weird. Let me look into it more. And then eventually I'm like, I have to find out if it's true. And then I'm read and read and read. I'm like, I'm going to read everything I can find about the Quran, about the Hadith, and about Muhammad. And then after that whole project was done, I'm like, okay, I can't be Muslim anymore. And I started posting on Facebook about it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was a quick thing. I didn't feel any sort of...
When you say quick, what are we talking? Weeks, months?
Yeah, a couple of weeks. I mean, wow. To me, that's quick because I was Muslim for 15 years. So yeah. I was technically born Muslim. I was an Ismaili Muslim, but I converted to Orthodox Sunnism. Okay. And I was Sunni for 15 years. And then after that, I left Islam in a matter of weeks. So that was like, wow. I mean, it was
a couple of months. So I hear you. So, but sometimes it's like, if you get that seed planted in you, you never know how long. So this is, I've heard from a lot of people who have been tuning into whatever the stuff I do is for sometimes for years. Sometimes they started following me because they want to pick a fight about something. But over time, when they hear it and see it. And again, I feel like on the website, I'm not unfair with the criticism. I'm kind of saying, like, look, you can read it for yourself. Here it is.
Yeah.
Here's what the hypocrisy is. Here's what the issue is. Yeah, it's my commentary, but it's based on facts that you can all judge for yourself.
Yeah.
How many times do I have to do that before someone admits, like, okay, fine, I agree that's a problem? Like, how you can't avoid all of them, because I do get emails sometimes like, how come you wrote about this one person? That person doesn't represent true whatever, Christianity, Islam.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't care if you don't buy that story. Read the other 900.
Yeah.
Like, they're not all on the fringes at some point.
Yeah. Have you interacted with a lot of Muslims at all, or with Islam?
Fewer, but yes. Yeah, fewer, but yes.
Certain experiences.
You know what was interesting? It's they're all, so it's a newer phenomenon, at least in terms of organized, like ex-Muslims.
Yeah.
Like, so I've seen it more recently than I did initially.
Yeah.
But because there are more people speaking out, and because there are more people sharing their stories and organizations that are trying to help people who are leaving, it's become a little easier for them to do so. And it helps when they can talk to someone like you, or someone else who has left and understands the culture and understands the beliefs and the way it actually plays out. Because there's a big difference between like your understanding of Islam and Sam Harris's. You know what I mean? So it helps to listen to someone like you who knows it and gets it, and your family is this way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Compared to some other academic who only sees it from a distance.
Yeah.
And so if I can provide that for someone... But for Islam, because there are more people speaking out now instead of one person or one book or whatever, that helps a lot. I know when I started coming out as an atheist, there was really like literally a couple of books that were out there. There were organizations. I just wasn't tapped into that. But there were only like a handful of resources out there. And the organizations never got through to me, and I didn't know to look for them. And now I'm almost jealous, because if you were in that position today, there are so many people, and you could kind of look around and find someone you connect to. I mean, there are more women, there are people of all ages, people who have different styles. And so, I mean, like even now I'm on YouTube, for example, there are so many people where I'm like, I don't like their stuff. I don't like the way they talk. I don't like what they're saying.
Be picky now.
Totally. But I can't, I have the luxury to be picky. And that's awesome because there's a lot of people I really do like.
Yeah. You made a good point that, you know, the more people that come out and, you know, stand up and say, here I am, I'm ex-Muslim, I left my faith, the more, the easier it is for other people to also come out and to say, well, I don't want to follow this religion anymore and you can't force me to.
Right. When you, and I would encourage, I mean, anyone who is listening, who's commenting or whatever, if you have the freedom to do so, please do it if this means something to you. We're just talk about it. I mean, again, I've seen like a, I once saw a fashion blogger, YouTuber rather, like who always, all of her videos are about fashion, beauty tips and stuff. And then she made a video about being an atheist, just a different type of video for once. And she was able to reach people I never would have reached because she had a connection to them and her voice was different from my voice. And some people connect with that better. So like anyone who's watching, if your ex, whatever it is, same thing with Jehovah's Witnesses, I've heard it with Scientologists, name it. When they come out and they could speak the language and they get it, do it if you can, because yeah, it does make a difference. It does make it easier for all those other people too.
Definitely. Like when I came out 5 years ago, already it was getting a little bit more, it was already getting easier. But now it's got like to the point where there's so many public ex-Muslims now that you can like, I don't even know if you can count them all on your hands. But I actually looked up to the people that came out ahead of me. And I'm like, well, these guys came out and not just came out, they have channels or they're talking about Islam and the sort of getting away with it, meaning that hurt them. Nobody's harmed them. Right.
Right.
Do you ever get like threats, death threats or anything like that?
Yeah. Not as many as some other people I've talked to. It happens. I deal with them.
Why are they just like random trolls?
I can distinguish, it's both, but
what?
Sometimes,
wow.
I deal with them as I need to deal with them, but I have been fairly lucky in the sense that like, I mean, I feel like I'm not incendiary like some people are. So the type too, of, right? The type of, I get more emails saying I want to debate you than people trying to like come after me or something, you know?
Yeah. I've, the worst thing that happened to me, I get a lot. I used to get, when I first came out, I got a lot. Now I don't get barely any. But the worst thing that happened to me is I found out after it happened, like way after it happened, like maybe 6 months or 1 year. I found out from my boss that people had called my company and tried to get me fired. And what they told, I mean, this is crazy. Like, I was shocked to find out that they talked to my, I mean, I don't know who they talked to, but at my company, HR was involved. My boss was, even the president knew about it. I was like, what? I'm like, what were they saying? And he's like, oh, I don't exactly know what they said, but it was something to the effect of he's Islamophobic. He's a bigot. He's anti-Muslim. Now, none of these things are true. If anyone like, I have a reputation for being a fake ex-Muslim, okay, among right-wingers. Right-wingers think I'm, like, a closeted Muslim because I support Muslims' right to the freedom of religion and to, you know, like, I have videos where I actually defended a young girl who was wearing hijab and she was disqualified from, like, a running in a race or something. Because I don't, like, I have no problem if she wears hijab, if that's what she wants to do. And that has nothing to do with the race, like a runner. Like, why does it matter, right?
Right. So
I defended her in that case. I'm against the hijab in general because I don't believe in hijab. I'm not Muslim and I think it's bad. But I give them the choice and I give them the self-determination to make that decision. So I'm the furthest you can be from being, in my opinion, from being a bigot. I have a track record of trying to not cross that line into bigotry because I feel responsible for what I'm doing. I do not want to be a bigot and I do not want to be weaponized by the far right, by the Hindu, right? Far right Hindus or Christians or whoever. I don't want to be that person that's used by them for their agenda. And when you leave Islam, there's a lot of people that try to use you to prove their point. Right.
All the more reason it's important that more people are voices, because again, it's it's easy when there's just one person they can point to. It's so much harder when it's like, oh crap, there's 100 of them. They all have YouTube channels, whatever it is, you know? So I like it, I have not heard horror stories from people coming out as atheists as much as I used to. It happens, depends on where you live. But I feel like for a lot of people who feel that way, there are so many communities online anyway that will welcome them, deal with their questions, help them out. And that is a good thing when they have more resources.
Yeah, indeed. So I have to draw a distinction between just leaving Islam or leaving religion and actually being an activist. So in my case, the reason people were attacking me, like I'll give you like a example from my friend. My friend told me, like, this is when I left Islam. I'm like, yeah, I'm moving houses. He's like, okay. And then I'm like, he's like, yeah, I'll help you. You know, I'll help you move. I'm like, oh, that's nice of you. I mean, that's probably the thing. That's like the most, that's a good Muslim thing to do because, you know, he's keeping a relationship with me, right. Keeping his ties. You never know. Maybe I'll be Muslim again one day, right? Maybe I'll reach out to him and say, but then he's like, oh, but you have a blog against Islam, so I'm not helping you. I was like, okay, I'll get movers then.
right.
But it's like you become, you know, to some people, and this is where
some people. And there are some people that won't be able to deal with it. I feel like I don't have those people around me anymore.
That's good.
Because why bother? But also I go out of my way to make sure this world, I stay in it. Like if I'm out with friends or family, this is not what I talk about.
Yeah.
Unless they ask, which they never do.
Yeah, indeed. I was going to say, like, I feel like in my case, it was a little bit harder than like a non-practicing Muslim because me and my wife, we deep dived into the Islamic community and we were surrounded by a really conservative, you know, kind of like what you find from ex-Mormons. Mm. So my experience in leaving Islam, I lost all my friends, majority of them. And you know, I had to rebuild my social life, my social ties. I had to make new friends. Same with my wife. She was kind of kicked out in some ways of the circle because she was no longer religious anymore, even though she was still kind of Muslim. But like, there's a lot of judgment going on, right? Especially among like when all your friends are your friends because of religion, then you no longer have anything in common with them. Even if you became friends in other kind of areas, but that was the main thing that, you know, and I've heard of like husband-wife relationships that broke down as well because they were married for the religion. And that was the thing that was common. And so when one of them left, it became really difficult, you know?
It is one thing I have argued to other atheists, which is if you think pointing out a certain contradiction, or if you can use logic to argue this away, it's not gonna help a ton of people because so many people stay in church for reasons that have nothing to do with believing in the stuff. They're there because of the community. They're there because that's their circle of friends, their safety net, their job security, if depending on where they work. Unless you can offer them any sort of substitute for those things, they're not going to leave the church. So it would be so short-sighted to say, well, here's all the contradictions in the Bible. Therefore, here you go. Now you're an atheist. Like, they're not going to stop going to church because of that.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not there because they believe it all.
That's, I think, one of the things that surprised me. And I was like, because I was the type of person that when I found out Islam was true, meaning Sunni Islam, I always just say Islam is Sunni Islam. I converted to it because I thought it was true. And I believed in it with all my heart. And I did everything according to the Islamic rules. I didn't work at a bank. I used to pray 5 times a day. I put my kids in Islamic school at a heavy expense, all of that stuff. But then when I found out it was false, the arguments were so compelling to me that I'm like, I don't want this anymore. And it was kind of different in a sense that I was sort of a convert. I mean, I was a convert. My mom is Sunni, but like I never followed Sunni Islam. So when I converted to Sunni Islam, I was able to leave it because I'm like, well, I'm following the truth. Some people are like, oh, you're just changing the religion every few years. I mean, it wasn't a few years. It was like 15.
It's always a phase for everybody else.
Yeah. Now I'm in my atheist phase. I don't know what's next after atheist. I don't know. Yeah. but like, for me, I didn't have a problem with nihilism or sadness or like purpose in life. I was happy to be like to be an apostate. I was happy. I have my purpose. I wanted to tell other people about it. I have my family life, and I have my full-time, you know, work thing that I do. I'm into technology and software development and all that stuff. So there's many phases, many, many, many parts of my identity, not just being a Muslim or not being a Muslim. But like, what about you? You personally, or people you know, struggle without religion, and did they fall into nihilism and sadness as an atheist? Are they just like depressed now? And then talking about, you know, a little bit more to add to this question about the whole church thing, and what is the substitute for the church? If you're an atheist, what are you offering humanity?
Right.
And emptiness and bleakness and sadness and nothingness.
I don't know that I've heard the depression thing too much from too many people, mostly because there are resources to some people. If you want to talk to somebody, there are people you could talk to. And usually the resources are plentiful enough online that if you're worried about that sort of thing, you can look it up there and you could see how people have dealt with it. So it's not that bad. I have seen some substitutes for those communities. Some are good, some don't work. Like there was a movement for like atheist churches.
Yeah.
Most of them have died off.
What about the Oasis thing? Have you seen that, secular Oasis? Yeah.
I think there's a couple that are good. They function, they meet regularly, they have a strong knit community. I'm not knocking that. I don't know how much it's spread. Again, if you have a big enough city that you live in that you could pull in a lot of people, you can form a community. That's not a bad thing. It's hard to do that in a lot of places. And again, as someone who is an atheist, like, I don't want to go to that sort of thing. So like, I feel like I'm the target demographic and it's not even something I would want to do necessarily. So trying to get someone else to do it, I feel would be even harder. So, I mean, the substitutes are not the same. The infrastructure is not there that it is. I've been to churches. I've talked to people who go to churches where that stuff is really good.
Yeah.
And like when you see it, it's like, yeah, I could see why you would not want to leave this religion, even if you don't believe any of it. I could say the same thing for the pastor. Like, I could see why this is not a community you'd want to leave. I mean, just the people are nice. They do support you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a good trade-off. Like, you still have to believe in a lot of stuff, oftentimes harmful stuff, but we don't have the infrastructure. I don't think we can, because the thing that binds it all together is this belief in stuff that's not true. And if we're not going to keep that, it's really hard to make everything else stick. Because what do you have in common? Like, I don't have a lot in common, I feel, with a lot of other atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I could find you a lot of other atheists where I'm like, I don't want to hang out with them at all. So what is it that's binding us together? Not much.
Sure. Yeah, I guess in the absence of a shared belief in a deity or creator God and certain dogma and then all of the rituals. But do you think that like religion survived for so long because it had some sort of benefit to humanity, or is it?
It does bind you together with people you might not have anything else in common with. That is a strong thing. You cannot find that with a lot of other things. And we've seen other substitutes for it, like maybe a sports team. If you're a fanatic for a team, you could run into a stranger at a party somewhere. You know nothing about them. Yeah. But if you're both fans of the same team, you have a link all of a sudden. You'll talk about that for hours.
Yeah.
And if you're living in a society where you got to work together, religion functions for that. Like, it will bring you together because you're both on the same page with something. I could see how that works, but we have other ways to deal with it and you don't need to believe in the other stuff.
I feel like one thing I want to happen is I want there to be more agnostic Muslims. So not necessarily ex-Muslims, but like Muslims, they don't really believe. And I want that to become acceptable right now.
Right.
So like there's so much judgment in the Muslim community that it's like not just between different sects. So for example, Shias judging Sunnis. For example, there was this story that went viral on Twitter where there was a Shia girl that died and this Sunni guy was fundraising for her until he found out she was Shia. And then he was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. And it was like a huge like controversy because like all of these people had given him money already. And now he's like, I'm just going to cancel the whole thing. And people are like, why? She's dead. I mean, like, but right. Something to do. They were like, oh, I don't want to give to the Shia mosque. So there's definitely hardliners that are preaching, you know, for example, Salafis, or also known as Wahhabis, they are always preaching anti-Shia rhetoric that Shias are disbelievers and they're not proper Muslims and you can't marry them, or, you know, you should not mix with them and this and that. So there's that element in the community still. But like what I want to see is I want people to get to the point where it's maybe the Muslim identity is still there, but, you know, you still go for Eid, but you don't really believe in it. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's happening in other religions. I suspect it would happen to Islam too. I mean, it's already happening with Christianity, Catholicism especially, where people go through the motions when they're younger. They might go through it later on, but when they realize they don't have to, and especially when they see the damage, you know, the Catholic Church is causing, when they see evangelical Christianity associated with Trump, it's like, you know what? I don't want to be a part of this thing, even if I like some of the traditions, some of the aspects of it. I can get rid of most of it and I would be just fine. And again, part of what helps that transition happen is more people coming out and saying, yeah, this is what I do. I don't do all that stuff. Yeah. Maybe I do Christmas, but I don't do the rest of it. And so when you have more ex-Muslims or even doubting Muslims speaking up and saying, yeah, this is where I'm at, it's fine.
Yeah.
The more people who say that, you see that, and it's like, oh, all right, I can deal with this.
Yeah, one of the comments is saying, any move to liberalism is actively opposed by Muslims and even Muslim-majority countries.
That's probably true. Like, in a Muslim-majority country, or in a theocracy, that's going to be really, really hard.
Yeah.
But if you're in the US, if you're in Canada, where there are other people around you who don't care, like it's easier to assimilate in that direction. And again, even in theocracies, like, and I've heard plenty of stories about this, the underground networks for people who don't believe,
kind of
find each other. I've seen even at like Brigham Young University, the Mormon school, the number of ex-Mormons, they all know each other and they all hang out and talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not official. You wouldn't find their Facebook page or anything. They know how to find each other.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think one of the worst places in the world to be an ex-Muslim right now, in my opinion, is Pakistan. Like I don't know why, like you would think it would be Saudi, right? But it's Pakistan. It's like, in some ways, Pakistan is worse than Saudi. It's bizarre. Yeah. It's just like they've taken the Saudi like sort of fanaticism to like a new level.
Right, right. And again, this is as much a cultural thing as it is just a religious thing. So yeah, if you hear stories about people who question Islam or leave it and then bad things happen to them, that just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like you cannot leave.
Yeah.
Or you have to be very careful. I've heard it from atheists too, who live in theocracies, who make videos and come out and they've been hurt. They've been killed. They are underground when they say it, like they have to do it very carefully. Mm-hmm. And it is much, much harder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's your advice to these young people? So what's your advice to young people that want to come out and to be authentic about, you know, what they believe to the family, to the parents, to the spouse? Some of these people are married, or girlfriend or whatever, boyfriend. What's your advice to them?
Sure. I'm assuming they live in a Western country.
Some of them might be in like the West. So in the West, I guess it's much easier.
Let's start with the West. If you have doubts,
one,
no one's forcing you to make a decision. Like keep studying, keep reading. No one says that the deadline is this date and you have to figure it out.
Yeah.
So keep learning. If you have questions about religion, keep questioning, keep seeing if you could find the answers, keep seeing if there's someone you connect with who you could hear a lot of the stuff they're saying. That helps. And also if you are in a position where your family might not like it, or your spouse might not like it, you don't have to say like, I don't believe any of the stuff. You married me thinking I was this. Yeah. I'm not that anymore. Raise the questions. Yeah. Like I'm not sure I believe in this aspect of religion, and see if we can get that discussion going. And I've heard more times than not, you raise those questions and you find out, oh, someone else doesn't believe this stuff either.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say like, I don't think I believe in God. It's more like, huh, I don't know about this communion wafer. I don't know that this tradition makes a lot of sense. And just see what that gets you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what about people going the opposite direction? What would you advise young people? And I've seen a bunch of them who are returning back to Islam or Christianity. I mean, in my case, I know a few people that are ex-Muslim.
Yeah.
So Islam and now they're Muslim again. Would you give them any advice? What would you say to them?
That's fine. It's your journey. You do what you want. I would say, like, now that you've been on all the sides, I mean, I hope you have a way to talk about it, a way to answer those questions. Because, like, whatever doubts you had that made you leave, did you suddenly find answers for them?
Yeah.
Do they satisfy you? But also, I don't care. Don't care what you think. It's more like, okay, if you want to believe that stuff, you can believe that stuff. Who cares what I think about it? But also there's a difference between you or whoever's going back and someone who wants to force that on other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I have a problem with. Oh, yeah. That I will fight against. And so if someone says like, I believe in this religion now, I think my answer even to close friends would be, I totally don't care. It doesn't affect me in any way. Yeah. And I'm not going to try to convince you not to do it.
Yeah.
You do whatever you want. As long as like, what are you doing with your religion?
Yeah.
Again, this is why I really don't think anti-theist is a good label for me, because it's like, oh, you're a Christian and you're using it to what? Feed homeless people and make sure refugees get help. Like, why would I be against you?
Yeah.
Priorities.
Yeah. Now, it's been an hour, so I'm going to go to a few questions and then I want to ask you, and then we can also share whatever you'd like to share.
Sure.
One of the questions was, can you please ask Hemant if he thinks Abrahamic religions are better or worse than the Dharmic religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, or Sikhism?
Again, my experience with Abrahamic religions in the U.S. is that they have more political power.
Yeah.
And I've seen them anytime the religious people get that political power, like the right-wing Christians, they have used it to hurt other people. So I'm not a fan. Like there are, I think, at least one or two Hindus in Congress.
Oh, yeah.
They are not problems. There are Muslims in Congress. They are not problems.
Yeah.
And so I have no issues with the Dharmic religions. And honestly, I have no problem with most of the non-right-wing Christians in Congress either. I don't think it's a question of better or worse. It's like, what are you doing with it? And it's very hard for me to find a lot of examples of like Hindus hurting people in the U.S.
or
hurting people in the U.S. They're always extremists, but like, not a lot relatively speaking in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. What is your view, Hemant, of the generous use of Hinduism extended on today's atheists and atheism by some? I don't know.
I haven't seen it. I don't know what that is talking about. I need more than that. I don't know what that is referencing.
Because okay. I haven't I'm seen not sure it. Either. If you want to just elaborate on that. Next question is... One second. Oh, yeah. This is what I wanted to ask you. This is my question. What project are you most proud of?
Oh, man. I try to do a bunch of different ones. I think.
What would you like to share?
Last year I did a project where I just did a deep dive into the history of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put out a podcast about the history of the Pledge of Allegiance. And that was it. I just put it out there. I did a Kickstarter for it, but like it was out. And then it was done. And then I left. And then I didn't go back to it. Like, but I was really proud of that. I did a book with a friend called Queer Disbelief. Like, as a straight cis guy, it was cool to kind of dive into how religion and LGBTQ rights intersect. And sometimes it's good, to my surprise. Like, so she wrote it, I edited it, but I was proud of that book called Queer Disbelief. I also like the YouTube channel because I didn't think I would ever do that.
Oh, yeah.
And this is with The Atheist Voice, my old channel, and even the new one. But I didn't think it would be interesting for me. And when I've given talks anywhere, I feel like like, I'm making this up, I'm exaggerating, but like, if you're under 30 years old, they only know me because of YouTube.
Oh,
and it's really people who are older who know my blog, and I feel like I spend all my time on my blog. So it was an interesting thing to realize, oh, I can change my medium and I can reach a whole different group of people doing what I always have done. So I don't know. I've always tried to keep it different and changing. And so there's a bunch of projects like that.
Very nice. So if anyone wants to check out Hemant's different things, is thefriendlyatheist.com. You can click on the, so probably the easiest one is if you click on the title and you click on The Friendly Atheist, it'll take you right to his channel. So you can also subscribe to his channel. Please do subscribe to his channel as well. And he has nice short videos, which are quite interesting, just like the ones on your old channel. Happy to see that. But me, I've personally interacted with your blog. So I ran into your blog, not your YouTube channel, but your blog, actually.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I found you in the first place.
Awesome. I'm glad.
I like the blog for sure. Okay. And yeah. Okay. So this is a funny comment. Can you mention that Hemant's view seems to be very US-centric? Yes, of course. He's speaking.
That's where I'm from. That's politics I have to deal with.
Like, he's not going to talk about India if he lived in US his whole life. I'm not going to talk about, I mean, I might mention here and there little small things here and there, but my focus would be Canada and his focus would be the US and his experiences. So,
yeah, and look, there are bigger religious problems in other countries, depending on, like, different religions are different problems in other countries.
Yeah.
Speaking about the US stuff because that's what I deal with.
Exactly. So, is there anything else you wanted to share, Hemant? Three quick questions for you.
Yeah, let's go. Quick questions.
Okay, what's your favorite type of music? Just quick.
Oh man, God, I don't even know. What am I listening to? I feel like it's been Broadway songs lately.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Bobby, what's a good movie that you've seen recently?
God, I'm so bad at this game.
Giving you a hard time at the end.
Oh, I did watch something.
Is it something on Netflix?
What I watched, Hannah Gatsby's new stand-up special, Douglas, on Netflix. It was really good.
Nice. Jesus or Muhammad?
Oh, come on. Not answering that.
Trick question, right? Okay, chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate,
okay. Sprinkles or no sprinkles?
Sprinkles.
Okay, there we go. All right. So, would you like to add any final comments to a conversation? Anything else you'd like to share? I shared your channel details.
Sure. No, check out my stuff. But honestly, if you watch this stuff, and I'm glancing at the comment thread. I know people always ask about that this stuff too. But if you have an opinion about this stuff and you like watching it, try considering if it's safe, to do it yourself, because all you need at this point is like an iPhone and good lighting. Not even like start it, put it out there. It is always going to be cringy, like when you look back on it, but just start doing it and try to improve it over time. It'll get better, but we need more voices. You know what I mean? I don't care where you're coming from. Everyone has an interesting story. Get out there and tell it, and you'll find your own style, and you'll find your own type of thing you want to talk about. Like, personally, I don't like talking about my personal life too much outside of like the atheism stuff, which I talk about all the time. But I like commenting on like US politics. So I feel like that's a good niche. I can fit in there.
Indeed. Yeah. And I tend to talk a lot about my personal life.
Yeah. Which, again, and I feel like that's a story I would want to hear, especially if I am Muslim or I'm doubting Islam. Like, that's a story I want to hear. I need to hear it. That is super important. So again, it takes all types. I say this especially to young women, to people of color, like, especially as an atheist, we don't hear enough of those voices. So anytime they're able to do it, I love hearing more of those voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. So I want to say thank you. Thank you for coming and joining, and for the wonderful short conversation. A little bit shorter than usual, but it's a little bit late. But yeah, thank you for making time for me.
Thank you, guys.
And I know it's late at night for you as well, and I really do appreciate it. And it was a pleasure speaking to someone that I've been following for a long time now.
Thanks.
So really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. I'll talk to you all soon. Thank you all for joining in and watching.
And if whoever is new here, please consider subscribing. And if you can afford it, please join the channel as well. For as little as $2 a month, you are giving your vote of support to YouTube that this channel is worth your time and your support. And I'm hoping that that will do well for the channel. Okay. Thank you, everyone. And have a, for me, good night. And I guess good morning for the rest of you. Bye.
Bye.